I've seen a great deal of undeveloped faith. So, and this, I think, with the young people, especially coming into our communities nowadays, I think many have been starved for the kind of even knowledge, let alone formation, that I'd like to think that most of us received. So it's an undeveloped faith.
But people like Charles Davis did this great work, and then went so
disturbed. Well, there are different reasons, of course. Now, in Charles Davis's case, have you ever heard this? It was never in print, but one of my Jesuit confreres from England was a classmate. He was a fellow faculty member of Charles Davis, who taught at our Jesuit Scholastic at Heathrow in England. And the expression among the Jesuits, and only Jesuits would have coined this expression, that the reason for the fall of Charles Davis, you all know who Charles Davis was, you've heard about him. Well, he was a great English theologian, one of the specialists of the Second Vatican Council, who wrote some very fine books, and then all of a sudden left the church about the end of the council. Well, the Jesuits who knew him, he was not a Jesuit, but he taught at our Jesuit faculty, that the fall of Charles Davis was due to the Council of Florence. Now that council is spelled S-E-L. And that Florence is not the Council of Florence, which happens to be a great ecumenical council of the church. Date, 1415 A.D. But it's the name of a woman. A woman by the name of Florence, her last name, may never be known to posterity. She was a divorced woman who fell in love with Charles Davis the first time she heard him speak. She followed Davis for some 5 years. Wherever he went, Florence was there. He lectured in England, she was there. In Ireland, she was there. In France, she was there. And she always made sure that her presence in the audience were recognized by Charles Davis. But Charles Davis, this is from one of my confreres from Heathrop, where he taught at the English Theologate. Thanks for the question, it's a setup. I could talk for 2 hours. He was so busy, so immersed in work, this is Charles Davis. He was seldom seen to say his office. He often did not have time even for a daily mass. He was not known to make a meditation. He became too immersed in his work. He became suddenly famous, so that neglect of prayer, the neglect of community life, because he had the people with whom he was living. He was never known to be at recreation. And by that time he became, and Florence took her 5 years. She finally got him. He, quotes, married her. Does that help a little bit? Sister? It is pride, but pride, remember, is a deep-seated disease which manifests itself in various ways. and the most devastating way that pride manifests itself, the most fundamental way, is the neglect of prayer. Because whatever else prayer is, and it's many things, it is the evidence of my total dependence on God. He neglected prayer, and he allowed himself to be beguiled by human praise, and finally, he fell. I have a lecture of Charles Davis, which he gave in Canada, where I taught for several years. You would never believe, listening to that lecture, that Davis had ever had the faith. It seemed, at least from the time that I heard that lecture which he gave, that he believed in nothing, beginning with a personal God. So it is the neglect of prayer which is a form of pride. And the more exposed we are, especially, oh, how I can say this, the more we're exposed to human praise, the more we must pray. Otherwise, we will fall as sure as there's a law of gravity. God makes sure that a person who doesn't pray is going to go down, even to sink to the level, well, as the prodigal son of the hog, that he would take some food from the trough, as the gospel says, to fill his belly. Pride. And the most terrible manifestation of pride is the neglect of prayer. Because whatever else prayer is, it is the admission of the most profound humility where we most need it. Our complete and constant dependence on God.
In the next conference, Father Hardin speaks on the subject, the art and science of prayer.
The subject of prayer is the single most basic element in religious formation. Prayer may be considered in terms of the what, the why, or the how. What is prayer is its definition. Why pray is its motivation. How to pray is its practice. Now, while religious or prospective religious, even in pre-postulancy formation, while they all need to be taught prayer on each of these three levels, the what, the why, and the how, I think number three is the most important. In other words, the how. How to pray. Having said that, we ask ourselves, why distinguish between the art and science of prayer? In other words, what are we talking about? The reason it is important to distinguish between the art and science of prayer is because there's a difference between knowing how to pray in the abstract, in general, that's the science of prayer, and how I should pray, that I call the art. Before we go deeper into the analysis of this important subject, let me suggest some presuppositions. First, we must presume that those who have a religious vocation have the grace to pray. In fact, they shouldn't be accepted if they don't. Second, we presume that they want to pray. They may not be doing a lot of prayer when they enter, but they want to pray. Third, we must further presume that some have more grace for prayer than others, either because of their own past life or simply God's goodness. And finally, we should presume that those who have a religious vocation have above average grace to become expert in prayer. First then, what about teaching the science of prayer? And then, the art. But first, the science. This is found in all the standard manuals. Tanqueray has large sections on the science of prayer. It covers all the essential elements that the spiritual masters have taught over the centuries. Namely, that to pray, and above all pray well, a person must, to just mention six things, must be detached from creatures. Secondly, must try to keep recollected between formal prayer. A disabided mind will not be a praying mind. Third, the person must train him or herself in the practice of thought control. Otherwise, the same mind that is dissipated outside of prayer will be dissipated during prayer. You don't pray with somebody else's mind, it's our own. Fourth, the person must be charitable. Unkind people are deprived of the gift of prayer. God just won't give them the grace. Fifth, to pray well, especially the amount and the intensity of prayer required in the religious life, there must be some preparation. Maybe a simple thing is anticipating the next morning's liturgy. But whatever, some preparation. And sixth, there must be a firm resolution to give the time and effort necessary. It takes time to pray, and it sure takes effort. And a person should not say, "But I can't pray." Well, of course you can't. That's why you need grace. But have you tried? What am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? Well, keep your mind on what you're praying. You mean it? Of course I mean it. So much then for the science of prayer. A large, important subject. You might say, the theology of the method of prayer. But now the art of prayer. This is different because no two people are naturally the same. And the same directive that we've given before apply differently to different people. Those who are naturally more selfish have got to work harder on their charity if they're going to become prayerful individuals. So no two of us are naturally the same. Secondly, with no two people does God act in the same way. And one thing that you find out soon if you haven't, well, look for it, is how differently the Holy Spirit deals with different souls. Again, even with the same person, moods change naturally. And graces, or different kinds of grace, come and go. I can't turn myself away from prayer in the morning. and by the evening, I can hardly bring myself to pray. Concretely, therefore, directing souls in the art of prayer is dealing with individuals, knowing them, helping them to know themselves, and ultimately, they're making decisions before God for themselves. Some practical recommendations. And here I have, this time, only 12. Each person should be given a chance to reflect on how God's grace in their prayer life operates. How is God leading me? Now, one way I found it useful over the years is to ask the person to write out. Say, just write out some prayers. Talk to God in writing. And ask the person to let you read it. Or if they are the reflective type, to reflect on how they think God is working in them. Of all the self-examinations we make, this is one that I couldn't say is not the most important. Second, help each person to discover the spirit of prayer. By that I mean to ask God to enlighten him or her. There's only a single passage in all of Revelation in which the apostles asked the Lord to teach them anything. What was it? Teach us to pray. Third, help the individual, and we're dealing with an individual now. Science is broad, it's generic, it's for everybody. The art pertains to each person differently. Have them know about the various kinds of prayer which there are, and try them out. Various forms of meditation. And try to help the person not to get into a rut. Now later on, it's no longer a rut. Then God decides this is the way this person should generally pray. But by that time, there should have been a fair amount of, I don't want to call it experimentation, but working with different kinds of prayer. Because once a person settles, for example, on some of the Jesus prayer, which we hear so much about nowadays, beautiful. But it's just one sliver. And a person can make a fetish of some single form of prayer. So the different kinds of prayer. Secondly, have the person learn to pray about different subjects, different topics. And that both because some people generally migrate in some one direction, which frankly may not be the best for them. Maybe it is, but let them find out. Some people, for example, find it very difficult to meditate on, say, God's justice. No wonder. They're scared. Their conscience isn't perfectly clean. So various subjects or topics of prayer. And among the subjects and topics of prayer that should be recommended to the people is what interests or concerns them. Now for beginners, books of meditation and various formulas are useful. But in time, a person should develop his or her own concentration of subjects. Take the four evangelists. They couldn't be different. Matthew, with his long disquisitions on the messianic prophecies being fulfilled. Mark, short to the point. There are more devils in Mark's gospel than the whole New Testament put together. Christ is driving demons on right and left. That's Mark. That's different. Luke, the evangelist of women, the evangelist of Our Lady, the evangelist of the Holy Spirit, the evangelist of God's mercy. He's totally different from Mark. And John the mystic. He begins in eternity in heaven and he stays there through the 21 chapters of his gospel. That's John. To try one gospel, try another, because they may need different, you might see, forms of prayer, subjects of prayer, for different occasions. Fifth, length of prayer. Augustine comments that some people find it better to pray at length without interruption. Others find it better to pray for a short while or a shorter while, then an interval, then come back to prayer. So the length of prayer. And as a general rule, I don't mean in the first 6 months of the novitiate, but as a person goes on in the novitiate's life, the length of prayer should be extended. I don't mean that by the time we are near to eternity, we're praying 20 some hours a day, take 4 hours, you might see of sleep. No. And a good index of whether the person is growing is whether the life of prayer, the amount of prayer, has at least remained constant and maybe increased. 7. The use of affections in prayer. Be very simple, personal, even outspoken in prayer. Speak from the heart. 8. Help the person to distinguish between contemplation and meditation. Meditation, you might say, is a means to contemplation. When I meditate, I mainly use my reason. When I contemplate, I use the mind to reflect and contemplate, hence the word, on what my reason has told me is true. 9. As a person grows in holiness, prayer should become more simple, less complicated. The prayer of quiet is a good term. It is not quietism. The reasoning process would be, and we would expect it to be, less strong. Number 10. The person should know about the stages of prayer, that there is progress. And a fine book that I could recommend is Edward Lean, Progress to Mental Prayer, one of the great books in modern Christian spirituality. Not that we ever completely graduate from a lower stage, but at least to know that we should be getting on. To stay in kindergarten for 8 years is wrong. 11. Keeping a record of prayer. Not everybody likes this, but even those who may not like it might try it out. That means keeping a record of my reflections, inspirations, and on occasion reflections on how well or poorly I've done. And 12, this is the big one. Be sure that prayer is fruitful. It either fructifies in virtue or go back to your prayer. Something is wrong. Maybe a person is substituting prayer for effort at growing in virtue. So much for that. Any questions? I think we should have. I'm sorry, I should have paused more than this.
Father, if someone prays a great deal of time, seems to be a very prayerful person, but tends to use vocal prayer, in other words, written prayer, I hate to discourage it because I hate to.
Well, I would say you're correct. On the other hand, the person should be introduced to some mental prayer. And he or she might find it very difficult to engage in mental prayer, but then they should be helped. Because, while there are exceptions, I would suggest that a religious should be able to pray mentally and not only vocally. And they should be taught how. In other words, I would not myself rest satisfied. I couldn't. If a person who was given to a great deal of vocal prayer, that I had not made every effort possible to teach, introduce into, and help the person cultivate the spirit of mental prayer.
If a person is praying the prayer quite frequently, right? Their prayer is very simple, does also their life tend to become more simple when they have their conversation more simple?
Yes. In other words, there is a simplification in the spiritual life on every level, including prayer. Now, all of these things have got to be qualified, because the same person may be authentically in the prayer of quiet, and yet there may be certain problems which he or she may have that may not seem to be all that calm or quiescent. But I would put that down as an exception.
This concludes Father Hardin's talk on the art and the science of prayer.